Space travel and exploration asks us to expand our curiosities and our vision, bring something George Bernard Shaw once said to life, too. Some people see things as they are and say, why? I dream things that never were and say, why not? Those two words, why not? They certainly apply to my next guest's life and certainly her career. Her route took her from a town in New York to firsts in space travel. First woman to pilot a space shuttle mission. First woman to command a space shuttle mission. She's with us today to share some stories from her career and take a look at where space exploration is headed in the here and now and future. Her book is Through the Glass Ceiling to the Stars, the story of the first American woman to command a space mission. Colonel Eileen Collins, thank you for being here today, Colonel.
Well, thank you. It's great to be talking with you.
EileenCollins.com. Learn more about her life, her career, her stories, and the inspiration she gives. And I said this to Eileen off the air. I want to say it here with you listening. For those of us who are space geeks, who are always enthralled and enthusiastic about the launches and the landings, what Eileen does with her book, she adds so much of the detail of everything that goes on in between, which when you looked at the finished project and you look at that, you're thinking, well, I said the words, why not? Maybe did you think of how that happened?
Well, I actually do think that. It's funny that you say that. I look back at my life at this point and say, how did it happen? I think that there's still a little bit of a mystery there. And that's all the way back to fourth grade when I first read an article about the Gemini astronauts, and this was, you know, in the late 60s, and I was just fascinated with them. I wanted to be just like them. So I started reading about, what did they do? Well, they were test pilots, military pilots, they were engineers, and I thought, well, I'm going to be just like them. And that idea never left my head all throughout my life. And I was, joined the Air Force. I became a pilot. I started looking at test pilot school. I eventually, after three tries, got in there. And as I look back, as you asked, it wasn't easy, and things didn't just happen exactly as planned. I had a lot of doors shut in my face. I made mistakes. I didn't get yes every time I asked a question. And I had to just keep trying and find different ways to do things. And I wrote about all that in the book because, it's perseverance. And I think that even though I wasn't, the top in my class, every program that I went through, I think for me it was just perseverance and continuing trying over and over again. I always had a backup plan also. But I do, it is funny when you look back at your life and you wonder, how did that happen? But I like to look forward too, and I look forward to all the great things that are going to happen in the future.
Well, certainly with the Artemis program that we'll get into in a few moments too. I've referenced your firsts as part of your resume. In sports, in competition, you become a first after the deed is done. How much weight is there when you're the first going in before the deed is done?
Yeah, that's a good point, because I was, quote, selected in many times. Like one example is the first class of women in pilot training at my base in the Air Force many years ago, and then the first woman pilot on the space shuttle, and then the first woman commander. The pressure is there, and I would say it's not just for me to succeed, but when you're the first, normally you're setting the path for those to follow you. For example, in the Air Force, it was a test program, and the first of us women that went through the program, whether we succeeded or failed, would determine whether women in the future would be able to go to pilot training. So you had the pressure on yourself to get through, as well as the pressure to be a role model and set a good example and, help those to follow you. And I think it was that way also with the space shuttle program, although the pressure wasn't quite as much there. And I think because NASA is a younger organization, and NASA, I think, was more open-minded to having women in the program, at least after the space shuttle program began. And I felt very accepted at NASA. I didn't have to prove myself, oh, there's a woman, is she going to be able to do it or not? There were women specialists like Sally Ride who had flown before me as mission specialist. And then for me, being the first pilot, it was in you're sitting in a different seat, but it's also a different culture, and I want to say a different progression through the office because pilots become commanders back in the space shuttle program. So there was that pressure. I like pressure. I like challenges. I like working with people. So for me, it was, I would say, it was more fun. And with the challenge, I did better overall.
Colonel Eileen Collins and her book, Through the Glass Ceiling to the Stars, a story of the first American woman to command a space mission. EileenCollins.com is her website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Certainly, every space flight can, to varying degrees, come with its pressure and challenges. You write about one case, for example. Now, for you listening, visualize this. If you're driving your car and you look in the rearview mirror and you start seeing a long string of fluid behind you, well, yeah, you can just pull over, call AAA, and you'll be good to go. And okay, AAA maybe half a day or so. And I was going to say a couple of hours, but be that as it may, with the discovery on the way to dock with Russia's Mir, you get a thruster leak. You can't exactly pull over and slap some duct tape on it.
Well, that's right. We were leaking a type of hydrazine out of one of our jets, and unfortunately, that leak, well, you could see it. It was spewing particles out into space. And we knew that that jet was leaking right towards the location where the space station was going to be. So we had to stop that leak or our mission was over. And it took a couple of days. We worked with Mission Control, and we had a procedure for it. And it was, I won't go through everything that we did, but it was really the pilot's responsibility. So it was my chance to shine, so to speak. I had to run through our procedures. And, you know, we tried to bake out that jet. We aimed it toward the sun. Maybe the heat from the sun would plug it up, and we tried adding pressure to the line by throwing valves, opening, close, open, close, and my crew was like, Eileen, you got to fix this leak because we've got to do this approach to the space station. But over 3 days, we got the leak pretty much completely isolated, and then we were able to close off that valve completely. And we went on, I think it was the morning of flight day 4, Mission Control called and said, your rendezvous is now approved. And we all cheered, and we went on and did the mission we were trained to do. But that one, fortunately, was not life-threatening. I did have a couple of life-threatening events that I talk about on some of my other missions later in the book. But I'd say that one really got the pucker factor up.
Well, that brings up a point, too. Does every space flight give a new lesson for astronauts and the ground crew? Is there something always to be learned? The book is never written.
Well, there's always something new to be learned. And we remind ourselves that the space shuttle program was a flight test program. It flew for 30 years, but every flight had something new and different. Yes, the orbiters were different, but I think the key part was the missions were different, the type of things we did. You know, even things like, and we took up space labs, space habs, we took observatories, telescopes, we rendezvoused with the Russian space station, we built the International Space Station, we repaired the Hubble Space Telescope. The space shuttle was an incredibly versatile flying machine. It was a rocket, a satellite, it was an airplane coming home, and we were always learning something new. And I think ultimately what we learned was that that type of spacecraft is too expensive to fly in the long run. And that's why the shuttle program was eventually shut down and replaced with what we have now, which is the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket with their Dragon capsule on top. That is a much cheaper rocket to fly. You know, it looks like what we flew back in the Gemini and Apollo days, but the key thing is it's much safer also, and much more safer. Although the shuttle was more versatile, it was more expensive. Today's launch vehicles are, I want to say, not as versatile, but they are cheaper. And because of that, we can do more, we can fly more missions, and we can take more people and more payloads.
And with the upcoming Artemis II mission, they'll be sending the first woman and the first person of color around the moon. What's the significance of that?
Oh, this is highly significant. And when you see this mission fly in about a year and a half, all eyes on Earth are going to be on this mission. We have not sent people to the moon in 50 years. You know, 1972, Apollo 17 was the last time that we, the United States, went to the moon. This time we're doing it, there's also a Canadian on board. So these Artemis missions, as they go forward, are going to be more and more international. But I think the other reason people will be excited is now we are bringing in more of the population. You know, we have women, we have people of color that in the past were not part of aviation and space because that wasn't our culture back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And things have changed. We're bringing in people into the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math, while they're in grammar school, middle school, high school. We're telling them, you can do this. It doesn't matter where you grew up or what you look like or how much money your family has. If you really want to be part of space exploration, study math and science, and I tell the kids, do your homework, listen to your teacher, et cetera, and focus on the hard courses. You know, don't shy away from something that might be difficult. Take those tough math courses, and you'll learn to be a problem solver. And I think because we've been getting that message out since the Apollo days, more people are interested in space, they understand space, and can partake in it. So I think there's going to be huge human interest in this flight. And then Artemis 3 is scheduled to land on the moon. That'll be at least a year after that. And you're going to just see people around the world just very excited. This is going to be not just another technical achievement, but it'll be, a big boost for human nature, human exploration.
Well, even just Artemis 1, which was completely autopilot, unless you want to count the Snoopy doll that was on there. That's a look that up, Google that, because that's a longtime NASA tradition, too, with a Snoopy element on every space flight. But with Artemis 2 coming up, yeah, certainly. But Artemis 1, even that was just capturing people's minds and hearts that, will the rocket make it? Not even with the person on it. Now,
So Artemis 1, you know, that's a part of the buildup approach that we use in flight test and space exploration. So Artemis 1 launched back in November, landed in December, and it did circle the moon, but nobody on board, but they had cameras, and you could see the Earth, and of course there was a lot of excitement that came out of this. And one other thing I like to say about having the astronauts on board, the Apollo astronauts back in the 60s told us that they could stretch out their arm and put their thumb up, and the entire Earth would disappear behind their thumb. This is while they were at the moon. And you're talking back then, 6 billion people behind your thumb. It's kind of mind-boggling to think about the distances involved. And then you look at this tiny little Earth. It's this blue and white. It's been called a marble by, you know, Carl Sagan, one of our science writers, called it, you know, a blue marble. And you look in the other direction, and it's just black. And you wonder, you know, what else is out there? And you look at how, you know, small this Earth is and how fragile it is. It really kind of changes your attitude about, you know, really life in general and the planet that we live on.
30 seconds here. With all that you've accomplished and certainly have written about in your book, what do you hope you've empowered others to see?
Well, quickly, I hope that people can look at themselves and say, I can set my dreams high. You know, I named my book To the Stars, Through the Glass Ceiling, To the Stars, and encourage people to set their own stars and decide what, you know, what are your big dreams, regardless of your age, and what do you want to do, and how to make decisions, deal with mistakes, deal with conflicts along the way, and have backup plans and still have success.
Through the Glass Ceiling, To the Stars, the story of the first American woman to command a space mission, EileenCollins.com. Eileen Collins, thank you for your service. Thank you for your education. Thank you for your inspiration and for being here today.
Thank you, Chris.